Property taxes are a key topic for the 2026 legislative session. Dozens of proposals are already on the table. Let's start making sense of them. Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The Dakota Institute offers nonpartisan economic research and analysis for South Dakota. Kyle Copeland is one of their research fellows. He's also a professor of economics at Black Hills State University in Spearfish. I wanted to get a big picture about how property taxes impact school districts, so I asked him about his latest report for the Dakota Institute.
When I hear about what people are thinking about, what people are concerned about, especially this dichotomy between different groups of people in South Dakota, it always seems to come down to housing affordability and property taxes. Mm-hmm. The last however many years, it's been one of the key features of the legislative session. And so how is it that we can ignore that? And so that's right. That's kind of my point, is being part of this conversation that everybody wants to have, and hopefully being some reliable source of information.
Yeah.
And it's really complicated too. Like, yeah. Property tax policy is extremely complicated. And so,
yeah. And so I'm just going to make sure I say to folks, dakotainstitute.org, you can look at the research and you can read it multiple times, which is what I had to do before I was even talking to you, because it is complicated. Is there a simple and elegant way to explain how property taxes impact public school budgets?
School districts need money. They tax people that live close to the school district, people that might take advantage of the services in the public school. They pay for things, and if they fall short with their funding, the state of South Dakota kicks in with the state aid formula, and that guarantees a certain maybe level of public education standard across the state.
All right. So schools get their funding from property taxes, from state aid that is figured out by this, you know, complex funding formula, and then this thing called other local efforts.
Yeah.
What's other local efforts? What does that mean?
Other local efforts is a combination of, it's essentially a catch-all for everything else that school districts do outside of property taxes. And I mean, just a short list, things like utility taxes, bank franchises, renewable energy facility taxes, admission ticket revenue for K-12 events, those kinds of things. And it also includes federal funding like title grants.
Okay. And this could be very different in Hill City versus Sioux Falls.
Right. And so another thing that school districts do is they can make lease agreements with state local governments or state local, other local governments besides the school district, obviously. So and those lease agreements are based off of natural resources that are within the school district. And so in my report, I list things like land leases, mm-hmm. which are really common in Hardin County, things like forestry leases, which are really common in Hill City, Deadwood, where there's naturally a bunch of forests. But then we need to think about how geographically diverse South Dakota is. There are natural resources all over the state, but the natural resources are different in very many different school districts. Yeah. And so there are some local efforts, especially those that are related to natural resources, that some school districts have access to and others do not.
So again, a key takeaway here is if you understand how your school district operates, you only understand how your school district operates. That might be vastly different when we're making state policy.
Right. And the State Department of Education is extremely transparent yeah. with all this information. And so there's all the information that I get about other local efforts is provided by the South Dakota Department of Education. And it's literally a spreadsheet that shows here's all the other local yeah. efforts and here's which school districts raise how much money from each one of these different categories.
So how do school districts determine their expenses? How do they have any stability in budget planning?
Sure. That gets at the way in which the state aid formula essentially works. Mm-hmm. And so when we define state-based need, essentially it's this concept of planned expenses. And the biggest part of the state aid formula, I think, is the student-teacher ratio. But to know student-teacher ratio, you need to know fall enrollment. And then you need to know how much you're going to pay your teachers, not only with salary, but also with with their benefits. And so benefits packages in South Dakota for teachers are fairly robust. And I forget the exact ratio, but it might be something like 25% of their overall compensation package is benefits. And that's over and above the headline salary that we hear and that we read about. Fall enrollment and then how much you want to pay your teachers are the two most important things that I think determine school district level need. And then there's a fixed overhead fee, and whether or not every school district has the same overhead needs as every other school district can be probably argued and negotiated. But right. For the state aid formula purpose, it's a fixed fraction of the student teacher ratio and fall enrollments.
So what changed coming out of the South Dakota State Legislature in 2025 that's impacting this conversation now?
One of them comes out of 2024. The Governor Noem increased the minimum teacher salary from $35,000 to $45,000. And so that's something that goes right into the state aid formula, which is going to increase need for a bunch of school districts who might have had their teacher salary at the between $35,000 and $45,000, obviously, but is not going to affect the school districts that were previously over and above that. And there are different reasons why school districts vary and how much they pay their teachers. But this most recent session, Senate Bill 216, one of the things that happened in that bill was an assessment cap. Essentially, if you spend money to increase the value of your house, up to 40% of its existing value is not eligible to be used as tax revenue. So if you spend money to improve the value of your house up to 40%, it cannot be translated into assessed value for how the school district raises money. Now, that will affect the individual homeowner's property tax payment. And if you think about the fact that cities and counties all use the same assessed value as school districts do, if homeowners are spending a bunch of money to improve the value of their house, the homeowners that spent the money are going to pay a larger fraction of the revenue cap for the city and the county. And so they might end up giving their neighbors a small tax reduction-ish, if you want to think about it that way. The cap of up to 40% is not included for school district revenue, I think adds another interesting quirk and an interesting choke point to think about ways in which especially extremely wealthy homeowners might be able to avoid paying property taxes.
Okay. So if I put in improvements in my house, my property tax does go up, but what's the benefit to me, or what's the carve out do for me?
Right. So your property increases slightly, but the school district does not receive any of the benefits of the increase in the assessed value. Okay. I like to explain.
I see what you're saying. Yep. You explained it. I didn't understand it, so I asked it again, and now I understand it. Okay, go
sure.
ahead.
Well, and I like to think about it as property taxes are essentially a user fee, and so you're paying for the services that living in your house affords you access to. Mm-hmm. And so if you make improvements to make your house bigger or accommodate more people, then now you might be able to utilize more of the local school district services, not only the school district, but also other services like medical and fire and snow removal, those kinds of things. And so if you make the house more valuable, you might increase the number of people that could live there. And so you could increase your home's use of those local services.
Okay.
I like to think about property taxes as a user fee for access to local services. Now, whether or not every home that lives in a school district uses a public school district is not irrelevant, but it's less important because somebody that lives in that house could use the public school district.
Right. All right. So you could have a very large, expansive, expensive house, and you could live in it alone, but you would still be being taxed at a rate as if you lived in it with a family of four who were sending their, or a family of six, let's say, who's sending their kids to school.
Correct. And like if you in that highly stylized example, you can imagine somebody that wants to move to your area that would really appreciate to live in the kind of house that one person would be living in, that can't take advantage of the services in that district because they can't find a house.
Right. Okay. That's helpful. Well, let's talk about this next, which is some of the trends that you're seeing, because what we hear again and again is that property taxes are just going, people are getting priced out of their houses. What did you find as far as trends in school districts?
If you look at the state reports, the property tax statistical reports, I'm pretty sure that those are all reported in nominal non-inflation adjusted terms. And so looking at the last 5 years, there was a ton of inflation for everybody, not just South Dakotans, but including South Dakotans, in 21 into 22. And we see a whole mess of increases between the 22 and 23 tax year. And if we're looking just at non-inflation adjusted terms, then that assessed growth number becomes artificially artificially larger. And so just looking at the statistical reports, I think misses the fact that inflation was also really high over this period. And don't get me wrong, if you inflation adjust, there was a whole bunch of assessed value growth over the same amount of time. It's just much more muted if you take away the inflationary pressure.
Yeah.
If you remember, our state's approach to the COVID pandemic was we're open for business, I think was the phrase. But famously, like, that was a slightly different approach than some of our Midwest neighbors. And so we had a whole bunch of in-migration. We had a whole bunch of inflation. And naturally, we should expect the assessed value of our property in South Dakota to rise. When we have in-migration, net in-migration, that puts more demand pressure on our housing markets. And so we should expect not only market values, but also assessed values to increase at the same time.
Will it level out?
In inflation-adjusted terms, it already has leveled out quite a bit between 23 and 24. Now, assessed growth is still positive, which means that on an annual basis, assessed growth is still going to increase in inflation-adjusted terms. But it's not the rate at which assessed values are increasing has not continued to jump up. So in my most recent estimates, the growth rate of, say, owner-occupied housing is relatively constant, at least for the last 18 months or so. Now, that's not zero. That's that the growth rate has stopped increasing.
Yeah. So does it matter if those people stay then? If there was in-migration, does that continues to impact us? If those people stay, especially if they're working remotely...
Sure. And that gets into some of the alternatives that we have for property taxes. But the question is, like, who are these people and what are they otherwise contributing to the economy in South Dakota?
Right,
and so a lot of people move for jobs. And the more I've had this conversation, why did people move to South Dakota after COVID? The more I came to realize that it's really just that if people have the option to work remotely, they started to look around and say, what do I want my location to look like when I'm not working? Mm-hmm. If I'm working on a computer all day, what do I want in the 100 feet around my computer, or the 200 feet, or the 15 acres or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if the some of the people that are moving in are just other people that enjoy being outdoors and enjoying the natural amenities that South Dakota has.
Yeah. Enjoy South Dakota. Yeah,
exactly.
But I also want to ask about, you mentioned title funding, and is the federal funding landscape for schools is also shifting? How so? In what ways?
About a year ago, a federal approach to government spending particularly DOGE, a lot of folks, especially people in academic communities who rely on not only title grants, but also things like NSF funding and other types of funds to be able to pursue research, to be able to pursue educational advancement, those kinds of things. That was a big question mark for a lot of us. Title funding, I think, was one of the things that weathered the storm fairly well. And so we have some uncertainty going forward. The fact that the federal DOE hardly exists anymore, yeah. for lack of a better term, how are federal grants, title grants especially, being managed? But I don't expect that title grants will go away. I think that we should be a little bit hesitant about especially relying so heavily on them in the near future.
So from a school district standpoint or from a state funding standpoint, how diversified are we? How spread out are we? Or how concentrated and therefore at risk are we?
Sure. When I teach public finance, that's exactly the diversified is one of the words that I love to choose. And so when you're a local government, whether it's a school district, state or county or city or whatever, the more revenue sources that you have, the less exposed you are to changes in any one of those revenue sources. So for example, South Dakota has no income tax, which exposes us to changes in both property taxes and sales taxes more so than if we had an income tax. Now, I'm not advocating that South Dakota has an income tax, I'm just using it as an example. And so I think the last I looked, at least in the most recent year, title grants made up more than a fifth of the typical school district revenue of their other local efforts, 20% of their other local efforts.
Okay.
But I mean, for good reason, like title grants, things like advancing special education, things like educating teachers, like these are very useful things that we think increase the educational experience for students.
Mm-hmm.
And so we think those are essential things. In terms of exposure, though, like I said, relying 20% on your OLEs or more, it would be exposing. And think about, like, that's title grants come from federal funds. That's determined in Washington, D.C. And if that's a large fraction of your school district in South Dakota's budget, that would be, like I said, something that would make you think twice about wanting to rely so heavily on those.
Other key findings from this report that you wanted to highlight today?
The fact that assessed growth has increased, I think,
has assessed value growth increased?
The most recent report I looked at by the state was in the 40s or 50s of percent cumulatively over the last 5 years and in non-inflation adjusted terms. So year over year average of about 10%. But again, if you take the inflation away, it's probably more like 6 or 7% on average year over year. And keeping in mind that had the one or two big outliers in 21, 22, 23. Mm-hmm. And so like those numbers are important. But I don't think that they tell the whole story. And so, inflation adjusting, I think is an essential, thing to do before we make policy. And what's more than that, I think that looking at the, 23, 24, 24, 25 growth mm-hmm. rates would be more telling than, say, this the most recent report that I saw from the property tax task force in the state legislature. They focused on a cumulative growth from 2020 to 2024. And I don't think that they've miscalculated. I just think that cumulative period is not the same environment that we're living in 23, 24, 24, 25.
Okay.
I would encourage us to all look at more recent vintages of data to see if the annual increases are as high as they had been 2, 3, 4 years ago. And what's more than that is, I don't mean to marginalize or to pick on different groups of people, but the fact that we see assessed value growth being highly concentrated in really hot housing markets is unsurprising. The fact that to calculate assessed value growth, the county assessor in every county in South Dakota, essentially, uses this equalization rule of thumb to 85%. And so when your assessed value increases, it must be that your market value of your home, or at least the assessor's estimate of your market value of your home, has increased. And so if you live in a hot housing market, you are going to pay more property taxes. Some of that's supply side, some of that's demand side. And so if your property taxes are increasing very, very dramatically, it probably means that you have the opportunity to sell your house for a very large windfall, because chances are there's somebody that wants to and is willing to pay for the local services in that school district that you're currently living in. Mm. And like I said, I don't mean to for that to be dehumanizing or dispassionate, but maybe this is a good time for people to reassess themselves and their own needs.
But if you are retired and you want to stay put because you can't afford to go to the next place, even if you get a big payout, then that's where some of the pressure is being created, is the people who would like to stay in their houses and are on a fixed income now and are struggling to because they live in a hot housing market. And they're calling their legislators saying, I need some relief.
You know, absolutely. You know, and the opposite side of the example that I just brought up is if a person has been living in their home for decades and they haven't personally spent any money to increase the market value of the domicile, in what sense is it fair for that person to be taxed more? Like, they haven't done anything to their house. It just happens to be that maybe their neighbors moved in and made a bunch of improvements that are now affecting market values in their location. So the legislators have a really difficult job, which is, of course, managing how is it that we can make it affordable, not only for people on fixed income, but also people that want to move to South Dakota and send their children to public schools.
Yeah. I don't want you to have to answer a question about politics, but I also want to get smart and help our listeners get smart about what questions they should be asking when someone knocks on your door and says, I'm running for office. And the first thing I'm hearing from you is that if I have just one story, that is not really painting the nuanced picture. So a good candidate is going to have a nuanced answer to the what are you going to do about property taxes question. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. And
I mean, politics is all about coming down to a simple story, but always remember it's more complicated than what fits on a bumper sticker in this case, for sure.
And don't get me wrong, I'm not picking on the property tax task force. Like, their job is to figure out how to lower property taxes in South Dakota. Like, that's their job, and their most recent recommendations are ways in which that they propose are the best ways to do that. When we are thinking about elected officials, it's not only what are you going to do for me in the short term, but it's how is this going to affect long-term incentives for South Dakota. So, for example, if we hypothetically, if we eliminated property taxes, maybe that causes a whole bunch of in-migration to South Dakota. People that want to avoid paying taxes on their wealth, and so on one hand, having more on paper wealth moving into South Dakota might be seen as a positive thing, but on the other hand, typically people that have more wealth are people that are older in life, and then the question becomes how much of that wealth is going to be useful for South Dakota, and what does a potentially aging population mean in terms of our long-run trajectory? And I mean, like, that's just one hypothetical example and an extreme case, but weighing how does managing my short-run cash flow property taxes jive with what I think the long-term goals of South Dakota are, and me personally and every other voter that lives here. I think I read that there's 19 property tax proposals expected to be heard by the legislature this year. And that's to the extent that even the legislators they have to pick which of those 19 are the most viable. And then they have to decide which of those is going to be the best one. And that's just, it might turn into analysis paralysis. And it seems in a briefing that they put out a few weeks ago, they said, here's the four that we think, or the four or five that we think might work really well, but also here's half a dozen others that we also think might turn into bills of their own.
Wow.
And so it's just, it's a ton of information, and any one of these bills, I encourage my students to always think about who's stands to benefit from this. Like, who's the person that could hypothetically benefit the most? Who's the person that could hypothetically benefit the least? And then we work toward the interior on policy. Is decreasing property taxes good for everybody? Like, well, it depends on who everybody is.
If I brought a gubernatorial candidate in and I had them explain their policy to me, what else would I ask them?
Like, what are their long-term goals? And yeah. So how does their policy menu or whatever platform they're running on, how does that turn into long-term South Dakotan goals? And if they seem different on paper, how do they reconcile the difference between here's your shorter term goal, here's my longer term goal for South Dakota? How can we make those two things work together?
Yeah. Kyle Copeland is a research fellow with Dakota Institute. You can find his analysis on the funding crossroads facing South Dakota schools online. I'll put a link to it up under this story at sdpb.org. Or you can go straight there by looking for the Dakota Institute online. That's our conversation for today. We hope that it served you. From all of us here at SDPB, I'm Lori Walsh. Thank you for listening.